Hello and welcome to the Food and Drink Show here on Radio Reverb. My name is Karen Morton and I'm so glad you could be with me today here on Radio Reverb, sponsored by Brighton Gin. If you have not had Brighton Gin, you are missing out. So make sure the next time you go to a bar that you order one with a twist of orange. That is, of course, unless you're having the Seaside Strength. That is my all-time favourite. And then you have a little twist of lime. In that. You can go along and find out more about Brighton Gin by going to the website, which of course all you have to do is look up Brighton Gin online. So to find out more about cocktails suggested by Brighton Gin, Brighton Tours, and indeed how to order online, or maybe to find out where you can go and drink Brighton Gin, then go along and find them online. If you were listening to the Food and Drink Show last month, we were featuring low to no alcoholic beverages, and we had some fantastic chats with Laura from Club Soda and also from Amanda from Naughty Gorgeous Non-Alcoholic Wines. Well, I went along to the Mindful Drinking Festival in Brighton and Hove, and do you know what? What a great event. I have to say that they really do deserve a big round of applause because it really was very special. And my goodness, there were so many free samples and delicious drinks and workshops and speakers. And I had a really great time. So I do think that from all the drinks that I had, the ones that really stood out for me was the Naughty Sparkling, absolutely great, from Thomas Scott, and you can get it online. You can also get it in Waitrose. A very lovely wine, which you can get in restaurants, and apparently I'm told in all leading drink stores, and that is Very Cautious, which you can get from Ocado.com, and it's sort of made from the Riesling grape. It's a very lovely sort of fruity, musky white, and that is in my fridge at the moment. And also I enjoyed Crafty Nectar, which is a 0.5% cider drink, and it's from wisebartender.co.uk. You've really got to try it. It is delicious. It's like drinking cider without having the alcohol, really. It is amazing. So that is another one in my fridge. And the biggest thumbs up goes to Lear's Spirits. I have really enjoyed their Italian aperitif with tonic water. It is stunning. There's also a coffee liqueur, and I had a taste of just about the whole range. So they are now my best buddies. I really enjoyed their range of drinks, and that's Lear's Spirits. They have everything that you could possibly think of and enjoy. So go on to their website. So well done to everybody at the Mindful Drinking Festival. I did go and sample other drinks, of course, and over the course of the next few months, I'm going to be introducing you to some other producers, some fascinating stories, and really, really going to enjoy having a chat with them. Now, here on the Food and Drink Show, also, we had Andy Linz last month on the show, who is a food and drink journalist. He's also one of the founding members of Brighton Best, where they give awards out to restaurants in Brighton and Hove. And I was just really enjoying a fantastic conversation with Andy because he is passionate about food and loves to cook himself. And the main thing is that I want to know, with his vast knowledge of restaurants in Brighton and Hove, you know, where could we go if we wanted to make sure that we were eating out and, you know, enjoying ourselves, but being very mindful of what money we have in our pockets. So we've got some great advice coming now from Andy Linz in part two of our conversation with Andy Linz. So Andy, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, how did you get into food?
So I left home when I was 17. I went to live in a bedsit, and I couldn't cook anything at all, couldn't boil an egg, could hardly boil water. and I saw a recipe for pasta with peas and salami on a breakfast TV show, and that was the first thing I cooked. And I cooked that for my then girlfriend, who is still my wife, or is now my wife, I should say. So we've been together about 40 years, and then so that sort of kicked it off. And then I saw the Roo Brothers on TV. This is back in the 80s, and I got their cookbook as a birthday present, and that sort of just kicked it all off, and I just sort of got more and more interested in cooking from there.
Oh my gosh. You know, we could nearly do a program on its own about men and cookbooks and formulas and recipes and in the kitchen. So really, I suppose your wife's story around the dinner table is when people say, "How did you fall for Andy?" She would say it was your pea and salami pasta. It's got to be that,
Yeah, probably. That was probably it, yeah.
huh? You might say your charm and all the rest of it,
Yeah,
but
that's
that clearly
the most attractive thing about
Well, it clearly impressed her anyway. So that was good. The
yeah.
fact you could be in the kitchen. Nadia is saying in Good Housekeeping magazine was talking about there we talked about boiling an egg. And she sort of says she's banned her husband from the kitchen. And there are frequent episodes of things like he goes to boil an egg, forgets he's got it in the pan, and walks in to find him scraping the egg off the ceiling. So, yeah, you might need to go and give him a few lessons or of encouragement, really. But you know, the thing is that you know, we all have a starting point with the love of food. And you know, the whole thing is you don't have to be an expert, do you? We just eat and we love it and we know when something tastes amazing or when something is comforting or delights us in some way. And we're brought into Andy now, not only of coming out of COVID, but we're also in this financial crisis, which is affecting all of us at every level. And of course, the first thing that starts to hit, isn't it, is all treats are out the window. So, Andy, with your vast knowledge of the restaurants in Brighton and Hove and how to eat well, you know, what advice could you offer our listeners about how to eat well in Brighton and Hove on a budget?
I think, well, it's tricky because the situation is changing so quickly. And what I've noticed, I mean, this isn't talking nationally, is that prices are increasing quite suddenly and quite dramatically. It's maybe, you know, not the best time to be looking for, you know, cheap eats, really, just because, you know, everything, the raw materials, you know, cooking oil, staff costs, everything is rocketing. So it is tricky, but there are, I mean, looking down our list, we actually do the top 30 now. So we've got 30 restaurants to choose from, and there are a number of offers right now. So whether you know, that's obviously going to change, and these things change, you know, weekly, monthly. So you'll need to sort of keep a lookout on the websites. But you know, for example, Lucky Cow, which is a Thai restaurant in Kemp Town, a really good Thai restaurant, sort of modern Thai food. They've got a midweek dinner for £15 on at the moment, which is a, you know, a really good offer. I suppose, generally speaking, I mean, and this has always been true, you know, if you want to get a sort of bargain, as it were, you're going to need to be looking at midweek or lunch times, you know, away from the really popular times, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday lunches. You know, that's when restaurants really make their money. So you're not going to be finding, you know, discounts at those times. So if you want to eat out cheaply, midweek, and especially lunch times is where you'll get the bargains. But again, you know, somewhere like Wild Floor, which is a lovely sort of modern British restaurant in Hove, they've got a two-course lunch for £28, or four-course dinner for 35 at the moment. So relative to their full menu, that's a really good deal. But places like, you know, Bincho Yakitori, for example, the Japanese izakaya restaurant in Preston Street, you know, they're menu is always good value. I mean, there's items on there for, a couple of quid, basically. And it's very difficult. I've tried, believe me, it's very difficult to rack up a big bill at that restaurant, even if you just go mad and, overorder, you still won't get a big bill there. So Binchos is a good one. But there's quite a few that are good value restaurants all the time.
Well, that is something to think about. Well, you've laid the gauntlet down now to see if we can break the purse strings eating Japanese. But you've kind of given us a nice feel there, going from Kemp Town and back into Hove again. And it is a reminder of things that, just a reminder of things we know. Maybe don't always think about the weekend. Make the weekend special by bringing it into the week. Treat yourself during the week. Go for lunch or brunch rather than evening meal. And then, of course, what you're maybe likely to do as well, if you're doing that, you're possibly not going to have the alcoholic beverages that you would do if you were dining out, at the weekend. And that can also, can't it, save on your budget. And just look out, I suppose, look out for, good advice from yourself and your blog and going to Bright and Best. So keep an eye out for those things. I think as well to joining, isn't it? Joining some of the mailings for some of the restaurants, because if they're doing specials, you get to hear that first.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, I'm probably signed up to all the restaurant mailing lists. Wild Floor are particularly good at that. They're very proactive with their newsletter. The other place that's often offers on is a Mexican restaurant called Chaloc, TLALOC, which is on the seafront. And it's absolutely brilliant Mexican food. Authentic is an overused word, but they are mostly a Mexican team running that restaurant, and they use, some of their mother's recipes and that sort of thing. So I think it is correct to say it's authentic Mexican food. And they often have offers. So I'd follow their Instagram account is best for that, which is Chaloc Brighton.
There's something about the wonders of Instagram for food, isn't it? It is just, you eat, it's a feast for your eyes. One of the other things that we hear about quite often, isn't it, is that term a taster menu. And I was just reminded actually of a taster menu by a friend of mine. I'm just reading, she posted one up for a restaurant that she went to just recently. And it drew me in. So I'm just trying to see here. That's what it was. It was the little fish that you mentioned. And it just looked divine. So tell me the idea behind a taster menu.
Okay, well, so it's not a new idea. I mean, it's been around, from my in the modern form, it's probably been around since the early 90s, maybe late 80s. So it's definitely not a new idea. But it's just it'll be a no choice set menu of, I mean, some tasting menus are five or six courses. Others, the most I've had was at a restaurant in Berlin called Ernst, and I think it was over 30 courses I had there. So it can
Oh, my
vary,
Lord.
but they were tiny. They're sort of mouthfuls, really. And yeah, it just gives you it gives I suppose it's a sort of chef's medium, because they can really express themselves, and they can use a huge variety of ingredients, vegetables, meat, fish, fruit, spicing, or fermented items, all sorts of things. So it gives them a chance to really show off and really give customers, a huge array of, well, hopefully complementary flavors and tastes. But it can be, a commitment in time. You might be looking at 3 to 4 hours for your meal. So I think it's for people that really love food, really love the restaurant and dining experience. And it's sort of it's almost like a sort of little world unto itself. It's not necessarily where you're going out with a group of friends just to have a chat and eat and drink. It really is focused on that food and wine experience,
So it's the chef is opening up like a it's an artist's palette, and you're there. You're part of the art installation, aren't you? Because of the eating pleasure and
Yeah, you can feel
sensation.
like it. Yeah, if you've been sat there for 4 hours, it can feel a bit like
Yeah, I love that. Fully clothed, of
that.
course,
Yes,
being in a public place. But I love the thought of that. But no, I think this is the whole thing because we see often this, you know, the taster menu, and I love nothing better than sitting for hours eating. And just when you see, for example, Steve, you know, from Etch putting up his pictures as well too of taster dishes that he's sampling and trying out. I just think that is so lovely. Now, tell me, for you, summer is here, and what, you know, sort of what are you looking forward to eating, thinking about trends, thinking about produce in season, new openings, all of that. What's on your list?
So summer is, I suppose you're sort of thinking really about lighter dishes, maybe. You know, you perhaps not wanting to eat heavy French food with lots of cream and butter, but more sort of Mediterranean style dishes. One place I went recently is it's actually called Med in Brighton, and they do Mediterranean inspired. Well, they're notionally they're small plates, but they're actually quite, you know, and sharing plates, but actually quite generous portions. And that I think that is perfect summer eating because there's lots of sort of vibrant sauces and lots of vegetables and fish dishes, and it is quite sort of, you know, it just seems appropriate for the summer. I'm not sure if they've got an outside a terrace, but I mean, if they have, then that would be fantastic. I'll have to check that, but if they haven't, that's a good idea for them.
There you go. They've heard it first here. That sounds good.
I mean, I like dining inside in restaurants, to be honest, because I like the interiors. The part of the pleasure of restaurants is the sort of the interior design and the atmosphere and the ambiance and all that. But I think more and more, especially post-COVID, dining outside has become really important, not only to the customers but also to restaurateurs, you know, because it has become so popular, and people, I think, feel more comfortable, I think, outside these days. You know, if the weather's good, that's where they want to eat. So I think that's definitely part of eating out in the summer. And places like the Flint House, they've got a lovely roof terrace and also a sort of pavement terrace area. That's great. Riddle and Finn's on the beach, overlooking the pier. That's fantastic for eating outside. Obviously, the Salt Room have got a huge terrace overlooking the beach, which is lovely dining out. And also places like, say, Fatto Amano in the lanes. That's sort of like a they've got an outside terrace, and that's a sort of, I suppose, a more an urban version of the. You know, so they haven't got a view of, you know, the sea, but you can do an awful lot of people watching on their
You can, and you're
outside
in the
tables.
heart of the lanes. And what you've mentioned there is, you know, we can be in the heart of the lanes, which is very Brighton. And then, of course, if you're in Brighton Hove, you know, by the beach, we all love being by the beach when the weather is great. So we've got all of these wonderful touristy things, but also being a tourist at home, if we're not going away, it's summer and it's just delightful. So Andy, when you're not eating out, and you're eating in, and you're being the chef in the kitchen. What's your signature dish? Got friends coming around. You're inviting me for dinner, all right? But it's an informal supper.
Yeah, I tend to get carried away when we have people around. I tend to do, you know, sort of four courses and
I need more friends like you, Andy. Gosh, you must have a long list of friends.
I tend to, you know, it's like 2 or 3 days of prep, and I make bread and all sorts of things. And to be honest, I mean, so one of the things I do is I run a cookbook blog. So I'm getting all the new cookbook releases all the time, and I'm constantly cooking new dishes from, you know, whichever book has caught my fancy. So it's quite difficult for me to say what would be an actual, you know, signature as such, because it sort of changes all the time. But I mean, one thing I love to do, and maybe this isn't very summary, but I love braising dishes. So I mean, I did one last night. I did brisket braised brisket, which I did in, white wine and tomatoes and with carrots and things. So it wasn't very summery, but I'd eat a braise any time of the year. And
Well,
it's a really nice way to cook.
it's a lovely way to cook, but of course the whole thing is it's what you accompany it with. You have some lovely crusty fresh bread, a nice glass of red wine, and you've got a lovely salad or just fresh asparagus or broccoli on the side. That's in season and summery and gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of brightened up a bit with the salsa verde,
Ah, lovely.
but I actually did one thing I've been doing a lot, roasting cabbage, which is, again, doesn't sound very
Ah,
summery, but it's really delicious. It really
yeah.
is lovely.
Well, that's a nice thing too. It's all about flavor. And of course, you can make things summery, braised or what cabbage like could be considered, winter dish by how you serve it in the plates and the setting and all the rest of it, isn't it?
I did. I bought, talking of summer cooking though, I bought a new barbecue
Ah.
recently. So I've been barbecuing lots of stuff, and asparagus on the barbecue is beautiful.
Delicious, delicious. So you're going to go mad now with the barbecue, and might that be your next book?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's lots. I've got quite a few books on barbecuing, and there's some proper experts out there. People like Genevieve Taylor has written a
Oh,
great book.
amazing.
So no, there's serious experts out there. So I'd be quite behind, the field on that. But I'm enjoying exploring it and finding out about it. So
Well, Andy, I think we might invite you back, okay, in about a month's time to see how you're getting on with the barbecue, because I actually think it's better when you sort of feel that you're maybe a novice or not as experienced as other people. It's about the learning, isn't it? It's the trying things out. You make a mistake. What did you learn by it? And sometimes it's the discovery that's the exciting bit. And then that can help other people in the discovery as well too, where you failed and what came out as a result, which I think is a lovely journey. So if we can ask you back to do that, that would be fantastic. And if you were to, it's not that you've got favorites, but where is the of your top 20? I know you've got 30, but of the top 20 award winners, which one are you going to next?
Well, actually, I'm going to burnt orange will be my next meal out.
Oh, how delightful. And is that because you're in a bit of a, I want to go out and sort of be in a party vibe?
Well, I'm going with the family, actually. And burnt orange is it's a talking about, ambience and enjoying the interior. Burnt orange is a beautiful restaurant.
It's amazing.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, I have to ask you this because I know the listeners would never forgive me if I didn't. All right. So here you are. You're writing about restaurants. You're eating out all the time. You travel the world and write about what you find food-wise when you're away. And people think it's an amazing life and that you never have to pay for anything at all. Do you have to put your hand in your pocket, Andy, when you eat out?
Yes, I mean I do all the time. I mean I but yeah, I mean as a journalist, so particularly on the travel side, when I do food and travel pieces, often I mean people may not know this, but newspapers and magazines these days do not have the budget to pay expenses for their journalists. I would say 95% of what you read will be a journalist who's been hosted either by a hotel or a tourism board or an airline, maybe. Not so much these days, to be honest, airlines, but everything will be on a complimentary basis for travel articles. That said, the last travel piece I did was to Dublin, and we went to, which was, we had a fantastic time. We went to a two Michelin star restaurant there called Chapter One, which was the best meal of the year so far, and I'd probably put it in my top 10 of all time. And we paid for that ourselves, and the bill was not small. But so parts of that trip were covered and other parts weren't. But yeah, I mean, I spend money on restaurants all the time. So, it's not, I mean, in theory, you could probably, if you tried hard enough, you could probably never pay for another restaurant meal in your life. But I don't know how I'd feel about that. I think I'd rather pay.
Yeah, it's like giving back and saying, I appreciate what you're doing. It's lovely to be invited, but when you're eating out and you're choosing somewhere, it's like you're giving back yourself, isn't it? And it's part of the experience too. Sorry, and that's just a cheeky question. Loved it, because I know people ask that of me, you know, too. And a lot of the time I'm going out and it's my choice. And I like to then talk about places that I've just wowed me or pleased me in some way. And I can just do that of my own bat. You know, it's not part of a press launch or anything like that. And there are those times when it is part of something, a press launch or whatever. But
I mean,
Andy,
can I just make a point on that, actually, is
Yeah.
because of the top 20, the four of us that organise the awards, we have our own internal policy about accepting well, comped dinners from Brighton and Hove restaurants, and we try and avoid it at all costs. And the only time we would do would we'd go to perhaps, you know, a launch event. Or if it was, say, a special menu and a guest chef, something that wouldn't actually affect, because we vote in the awards ourselves, so there's a definitely a conflict of interest there. If we were accepting free food from restaurants that are listed in our top 20, there's an obvious conflict of interest. So we would never ever accept an individual invite from a restaurant to go and eat there, for that reason. But we would go along, say, if it was a special, you know, say a launch event or a party or a guest chef or something like that, which wouldn't affect our judgment of the restaurant when it came to time to voting. So.
Well, thank you there for your transparency on that, Andy. And this is very important, and it brings us back full circle to when we started, you know, the importance of the awards. You know, they are authentic. You know, there is a very tight and laborious procedure in choosing the restaurants that go into the top 20. And anyone who wins them, they have really deserved their place because of the voting, the judging mechanism in there. And I suppose it's really reassuring for members of the public like myself that if anyone's been on the list, if you're spending your money when times are tight, you can be assured that, you know, you're going to get pretty decent food.
I'm just looking at the list now, actually, whilst we're talking, and I think it's a really, really good list. It's really diverse. There's all sorts of price points there, types of cuisine, and they are all really good restaurants. I mean, I think I've been to every single one of them, actually. A voting panel of about 300 people, and we vote ourselves. But what we also try and do is actually visit the restaurants. We sort of divide them up between the four of us and try and get to all of them, you know, in the current list every year, to sort of give our own evaluation of. I mean, obviously that will affect how we vote, but we can't, you know, affect the final list because
No.
it's voted by
And of
the
course,
judging panel.
for those of us eating out, it's all subjective. It's feeding people ideas, and it's part of the journey, reading and talking to others about where they've been, getting recommendations. And Andy, I want to say thank you for your recommendations today. And also, we're going to have you back. And I'm going to be talking to some of the top 20 over the coming months, and we'll be going behind the scenes. So, thank you for joining us on the Food and Drink Show, Andy.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yum. Watch the sunset, kinda, yeah. Rolling eyes back in my head, make my toes curl, yeah. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum, that yummy, yum.
and you ain't never running low on supplies. 50-50 love the way you split it. 100 racks on me, spin it, babe. Light a match, get lit it, babe. The jet set, watch the sunset, kinda. Yeah, yeah. Rolling eyes back in my head, make my toes curl, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, that yum. On with a smile on my face.
I'm a lady, that you are my lady. You got the yum, 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 yum.
You got the yum, yum, yum. Whoa. Whoa. Yeah, you got that yummy, yum, the yum.
Justin Bieber and Yummy. And I hope that you're going to find everything yummy on the show today.
As it's summer, many of you will have your summer holidays all booked up. You could be travelling abroad or staying at home. Well, I'm going to introduce you to two chefs now who might inspire you to travel abroad to Louisiana. But we can do it right here in our own gardens with barbecues. It is the barbecue season. And as we know there from listening to Andy Linz, that's his speciality now with his new barbecue. So he's going to come back and give us some top tips. But let us now hear from two chefs that have been spending time in London at the National Geographic Traveller Food Festival. That is Brian Landry and Jeremy Langlois, who are specialising in creating dishes that bring us the flavours of Creole, Cajun spices, and of course, all things fish and seafood. My mouth was watering whenever I caught up with them over the telephone. So I hope you're going to enjoy the interview with them, just learning a little bit more about Cajun food and good old home cooking that inspired them from when they were young. I'm excited about talking to you about the food from Louisiana. This isn't something that you hear often, is it, in you know, food and drink shows like we have here in Radio Reverb? It wouldn't be the typical food group, and yet it is so yummy. Tell us a little bit, please, if you would, Jeremy, about your introduction to the food from Louisiana. Was it something from birth, or did you just sort of stumble upon this food group from living there?
Oh, if you're from Louisiana, it is 100% from birth. The two are absolutely linked. You can't separate one for the other. You know, in Louisiana, everything that we do, whether it's a birthday party or just things that, you know, as I was growing up, I thought everybody all over the world had crawfish boils because we always had crawfish boils. I didn't even realize that that was something unique to us just growing up. So everything about our food and our culture is 100% linked.
Oh, well, as you said, it's a cultural thing, isn't it? I mean, you just don't eat food to live. You live to eat, if my understanding is right. What would
100%.
Be Jeremy, if you were throwing a party, what would you be serving up on the buffet table for your guests to enjoy?
Well, I mean, it would depend on the time of the year, because we are very seasonal as well. But just normally, you know, of course, during them cold months, you know, we literally have something, a term in our area called gumbo weather. And and you would laugh, but when it's fall and you get the first cold weather that comes in. And when I say cold, not that cold, you know, everybody busts out their big cast iron pots and starts making roux and starts making gumbo. But of course I'm going to serve gumbo. I'm going to serve something like jambalaya, but we have access to so much great seafood. I love just that, just sometimes just very simply prepared, you know, any fresh fish, whether caught by friends or family or from the market, just very simply prepared, a little seasoning, a little olive oil, a little garlic, a little lemon, a little fresh herbs, and roasted in the oven as well. As long as it's just real fresh, that's going to be fantastic as well.
Oh, you're making my mouth water. And of course, you know, Jeremy and Brian, we were introduced, well, I certainly was, as a young child, listening to the Carpenters and their song Jambalaya Crawfish Pie. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's I'm hearing that in my head. Brian, tell us about your love of the food and where your earliest memories came from.
Well, as Jeremy mentioned, food is such a part of our culture. You know, I come from a rather large family. My maternal grandmother was a phenomenal cook. She had 10 children, my mom being the fifth of 10.
Wow.
So she was always at the stove. And, you know, whenever family gets together, it is typically around the dinner tables in South Louisiana. So I think for a lot of us, that's our first introduction to Creole cuisine and Cajun cuisine, is what you have in the home. And then for both Jeremy and myself, it, you know, once something that powerful gets in your blood, sometimes some of us pick it as a career. So now not only is it something I enjoy to do at home, but I've chosen it as a profession. And the privilege of cooking in New Orleans and in South Louisiana, with the access to the ingredients we have, it's just a phenomenal experience to have that permeate throughout my life.
Well, I have never been to New Orleans or Louisiana at all, and it's definitely on my list to go to. Now, when I think about the food, I mean, we get Cajun spices here in the UK. And of course, when you're cooking chickens and things, you know, just to scatter some Cajun spices, just lift everything. Whenever you're cooking, Brian, I mean, what would be the, could we ask you for your sort of secret ingredients, you know, that you take the traditional recipes from your gran and your mum, and then you've made them your own. What's your twist?
I think it's about layering a flavor. You mentioned like using Cajun seasoning. A lot of people think automatically assume that food from South Louisiana is automatically spicy. Mm-hmm. Jeremy and I definitely agree. It's not necessarily always spicy, but more seasoned well. And so when you think of a lot of the traditional Creole dishes like gumbos or sauce piquante or an etouffee, a lot of that is a kind of a slower cooking process where we're taking the time to make a roux, but we don't just cook the roux until it's blonde. We actually keep toasting that flour in the oil until it becomes almost like a peanut butter color and has a nutty aroma to it. Then we might start to add our vegetables, our onion, our celery, our bell pepper, our garlic. Then we're going to add a rich stock. Then we're going to add one of our proteins, whether that's, you know, smoked chicken and andouille sausage or shrimp and blue crab. You can kind of start to take it in a myriad of directions. But a lot of it is about the layering of flavor. And I think that's one of the things that makes Creole and Cajun cuisine so unique.
I love what you're saying there about the layering and, of course, the slow cooking. I mean, you're really cooking with love then, aren't you? Because you're having to keep an eye on things as you add and know when to add at the right times. And you've just brought those flavors to life. What I would ask as well, Jeremy, if I can come to you now. I mean, one of the things that we often will come to mind is possibly that there's a zillion calories if we kind of go and have Creole style food. Is that a myth or would that be the truth?
Well, I mean, I think in anything you choose, you know, well, first of all, as you know, and I'm sure you do, that moderation is the key of everything,
yeah.
Even moderation. But you know, I don't think that's necessarily true. You know, of course, we have so many different influences. You know, sometimes whenever I think of food that's terribly unhealthy, I almost think of like our French influence, which might have some cream and butter and this, that, and the other to it. And oh, we can deep fry everything. You know, I've deep fried a whole ham before, and turkeys. We deep fry whole turkeys. But
deep fried a whole ham. Wow.
Oh yeah. You haven't lived till you had that. but you got to get yourself to Louisiana. It doesn't necessarily have to go that way. Of course, I think all cuisines can go either way. I mean, when you think of Louisiana, one thing that you definitely need to think of is just our abundance of different seafood, and that can be prepared in a healthy way, as opposed to not being prepared in a healthy way. So we love our fresh seafood, whether it's the fish that comes out of the Gulf of Mexico or from our swamp regions, or the oysters, the shrimp, the crab, our crawfish. All that is things that are just screams Louisiana cuisine and things that we absolutely love. So those can be used in preparations that can be healthy, of course.
And I just love as well the way you're talking about all the different crabs, you know, like blue crab. I mean, here quite often we go to the fishmonger, it would just be presented as crab, but you actually have different types that you're calling them, which is lovely. Now, Jeremy, something that you've been noted for is sort of nouvelle side to Louisiana cuisine. What is that all about?
Oh, that's just a probably overly fancy term for just saying that, you know, how I approach the cuisine and the food I cook is kind of twofold. A, I have just an absolute love and respect for the traditions and history of our cuisine and where it comes from. Everything from both Cajun and Creole, all the nations, all the different ethnicities that have inspired our food that we use. But then also, I am also looking on, I want to honor the past, but I also want to look into the future as well and be part of just pushing the cuisine forward and seeing what things are possible. You know, as a young chef, back in my old days, when I was a young chef coming up, one of the things I loved most, I approach cooking much differently than I do now. I think now, just with age, there's probably a little bit more refinement. Whereas whenever I was a very young chef, I loved just throwing ingredients into a pot and just would see what would happen. Like one of my most signature dishes is this soup that actually has curry in it, which no one thinks curry in Louisiana cuisine, but that dish comes from a very young chef that was just going through a phase of just, I discovered curry and how much I loved it, and I started putting it in everything, and then some things just kind of worked out great. So I'm always looking to see how I can push the different boundaries in my cooking.
Oh, how lovely. And this could be for either of you, but I'll come to you, Brian. I mean, you've been sort of presenting in London at the National Geographic Travelers Food Festival, and you're introducing and tempting people to Louisiana through food. What sort of things do you think are going to go well, down well with the palates here in the UK?
I think people will be surprised about sometimes how refined our spice level is. The automatic assumption that all food from South Louisiana is spicy is definitely a little misguided. We do love our spice. We do finish quite a few dishes with a little dash of Tabasco. But a lot of those little dashes here and there are just simply meant to kind of wake up the palate. Mm-hmm. So as Jeremy and I cook through the weekend, I think you're going to see a lot of French technique at the base of what we do. But there's also influence, like one of the dishes I'll do is shrimp muddy waters, which is very Italian inspired. And what's interesting about the end of the dish is once you sear these shrimp and make this really rich shrimp stock, and then onion, celery, carrot, garlic, a little white wine, you can then take that dish and serve it either over a simple pasta with grits, which would be a very Southern way to serve it. You could serve it over rice. So you can take these dishes in a myriad of directions. And I think that's one of the interesting parts of Creole cuisine, is that because it's been influenced by so many different cultures, it's a very versatile style of cooking.
Oh, you're just, again, I'm just wishing you were, I was in your company to be able to eat now. And what is lovely as well about the Creole food is that it goes very well at festivals, and we love a good festival here in the UK. So from a street food point of view, how delicious is that? Now, Jeremy, something that I think that is you're both passionate about, and you, because seafood is so important, is about the sustainability piece. And, you know, how is that working out in the US, you know, promoting sustainability of fishing?
Well, just as a chef, it's all about just doing your part, you know, and trying to affect the little my little area of kitchens that I can the most. And one thing that I love is just working so close with either fishermen or farmers as well. You know, we have some great farmers markets in both New Orleans and in our Baton Rouge area, which has really come along as well, which is a little bit more closer to where my restaurants are located. In fact, we have one of my sous chefs. He actually leads up the whole project. We probably, us at Holman's House, probably buy more food from the farmers market than any restaurant in our area. We literally send him every Saturday with five ice chests. He rolls up straight to each individual farmer, and we get filled up and he comes in. On the seafood side, it is insanely important that we are just working close with those fishermen and really understand the source of what we're trying to get and the seasonality. A famous chef of New Orleans, Paul Perdeau, he invented this dish in 1984 called blackened redfish. And it became so popular that the redfish supply in our area literally almost went extinct due to the popularity of that one dish that he served for the 1984 World's Fair. So this is something that we've been through before and is very much on our mind. So it's just all about doing our part and really understanding where your ingredients come from.
And, you know, when we help also, isn't it, the people who are eating, our customers too, that they understand the sourcing of their food to it, it brings that connection, doesn't it, which is so nice to food. Now, we can't at the moment, unless people are going to travel to Louisiana, maybe some of our listeners at some point will, and they're enticed to go and eat in your restaurants. But how can anybody in the UK, outside of seeing you chef up, you know, at sort of big events like the National Geographic Traveller Food Festival, how can we get hold of your recipes? That'll be for Brian or Jeremy.
I think the easiest way is to go to louisianatravel.com. You'll be able to access restaurants, festivals, explore Southern Louisiana. It has a wealth of information. So that's louisianatravel.com.
Oh, that does sound good. And the very last thing I would love to know from you both, that on maybe a day that you're not feeling quite well and you're going home to get a little bit of motherly cooking, Jeremy, what would be the dish that would make you feel better?
Oh, I love a good jambalaya.
A jambalaya every day.
Jambalaya to me is the perfect just soul food, Louisiana food for me.
Oh, and Brian, what about you?
Close. I would do probably like a stewed chicken with a rich chicken stock.
Well, that sounds like a recipe my grandmother made. If I'm thinking on the same lines, she made the most wicked chicken, you know, gorgeous soup. And if ever I'm not feeling so great, that would be my go-to. And it just reminds me of home in Ireland. So that's a lovely thing. And food does that, doesn't it? It sort of brings a richness and keeps us close to our family and our roots as well, too. Well, Jeremy and Brian, thank you so much for joining us here in the Food and Drink Show at Radio Reverb. And I wish you all the best. And I hope to see you in Louisiana.
Absolutely. Been great chatting with you.
Take care. Bye.
Mango pops on a summer's day. Makes me feel like I'm gonna live forever. I don't want this to go away. I don't.
for our third and final interview today here on the Food and Drink Show. We're going to be talking to Caspian Armani from Isaac's at a fantastic restaurant here in Brighton, if you haven't already been. Now, not only are they cooking in the restaurant, but they're doing something rather special over the sort of, if you like, the August bank holiday. We're stretching it here because this event is on the Wednesday, the 24th of August, but it's part of Bite Sussex Food and Drink Festival Bonanza Weekend, which is the bank holiday weekend. But let's hear from Caspian now, and I hope you're going to be inspired to buy some tickets, which I already have my name down for this rather special event at the Sea Life Centre. Caspian, it is great to have you here on the Food and Drink Show. And really, Isaac at its legendary within Brighton and beyond. I mean, you've won one award after the other for great food, and unsurprisingly so. So what better way in Brighton and Hove in August for the bank holiday, whenever we're celebrating summer, but also we've got the Bite Food and Drink extravaganza going on over the weekend. But there's something very special happening, and it's actually very fishy. You're involved in it. Can you tell us here a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So Isaac at is partnering with Bite Sussex and the Sea Life Centre to do an immersive dining experience in the Brighton Aquarium. The dinner will be for charity, so we're going to be giving all the proceeds towards the rehousing of the beluga whale, supported by the Sea Life Centre and the Aquarium. But most importantly, it's to have people engaged with a conversation about sustainability in fishing and what that looks like for us in Brighton as consumers, but then also as restaurateurs. And that's all really exciting.
Well, it is. Now, I love the way you described it as an immersive experience. Mm. So how is that journey going to take place for those of us going?
Well, it's going to be an amazing evening, like from top to bottom. So we've worked quite closely with the Sea Life Centre and Nick with his partners through Bite Sussex and myself with the dishes that we're going to be serving. It's going to be a tour through the Sea Life Centre with a different course, a 5-course meal, a different course at each stop paired with a wine or a spirit or a drink or a cocktail to go with each course. And as you walk around the aquarium, there'll be different dishes and different drinks that accompany, and then culminating in a little talk on a boat at the auditorium. Kia from BNFS, who is just an absolute legend in the fishing business, certainly in the south, and he supplies all the fish to the restaurant. He's going to be talking about sustainability along with Sea Life Centre. So it's going to be educational. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be interactive. There's going to be fish right next to us. It's going to be, you know, incredible. It's a real dream come true.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is, isn't it, for you as a chef and what you do at Isaac as well too, it's all about innovation, isn't it? It's about being, you know, bringing fresh ideas. And of course, something like this, I don't think this has ever been done before, has it?
Well, actually, you know, I think Nick has done a couple of events with the Sea Life Centre over the years. I don't know if we've done anything as perhaps clear with what we're trying to achieve. You know, Isaac at is all about seasonality. We're all about locality. And, you know, those things don't exist without full focus on sustainability. And this has been something that we've been passionately pushing for, you know, 7 years now, and to have an opportunity where we can engage on a much, much, much larger scale with some of the pioneers of the city at quite groundbreaking times in their paths. You know, this is 150 years of the Sea Life Centre,
you know, being
the oldest aquarium in the world, and wow, to be able to be part of that process, that celebration, and to then be able to have a stage to be able to voice the things that are important to us, the things that we've been very passionate about and that are equally shared passions by the team at Bite Sussex and BNFS and Sea Life Centre. It's just a real privilege, and, you know, can't wait to share that with everybody.
Let's take us now into August, when you're going to be really cooking this incredible banquet at the Sea Life Centre, and thinking about what is best in season. What sort of fish are you going to be serving up?
Well, we're really, really excited about the dishes that we're going to be serving. We work quite closely with BNFS to find out what's going to be at its best at the time. So we're going to have some incredible place. Some beautiful, beautiful fresh mackerel that are going to be absolutely at their best in the summer, where they're nice and large and they just finished their mating. And then we're going to have some beautiful brown crabs as well.
Oh, that sounds great. And that's giving our listeners a little bit of a taste as well, too, about what's in season. So if you can't make the event, then, you know, some plaice and some mackerel and some crab, all locally sourced as well, too. And we've got great fishmongers around Brighton and Hove. I really think this event in August, Caspian, is going to be brilliant. August Bank Holiday, this immersive sort of experience at the Sea Life Centre, learning more about sustainability and eating your delicious food, which of course will be very fishy indeed. 40 tickets, there's not that many, so it's a very special event. So do go to Isaac at website, and the tickets are on sale now. And it just sounds like it's going to be really fantastic. And don't forget, of course, that we can come and see you at Isaac Restaurant anytime. And I've been enjoying looking at your menus online at the moment. I also like the fact that you give us some top tips about what we can cook at home, like the cabbage and the roasted carrots and things like that. And that sort of builds a connection with me, doesn't it? That you're actually sharing these ideas and helping me to be a better cook in the kitchen too. So Isaac at, and today, of course, we've had Caspian and Caspian Armani. It's been a delight to talk to you, and I wish you all the very best with this wonderful event at the Sea Life Centre. And good luck with your house move as well, and enjoy your new home.
Bless you. Thank you. That's so kind of you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. That's been great. It's been lovely.
So that is all we have time for on the Food and Drink Show today. I hope that you have enjoyed it. And however you're going to spend the summer months, let's keep our fingers crossed that the weather is going to be glorious for us in the coming months, and that we enjoy dining out and dining in, and dining in and out of restaurants and bars as well. So from myself, Karen Morton, here on the Food and Drink Show at Radio Reverb, see you next time.
Used to spend my nights out in barroom. Liquor was the only love I'd known. But you rescued me from reaching for the bottom and brought